Counsel, you're familiar with our procedures. We have 15 minutes each. The appellant has an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. Please identify yourself and your client before you begin speaking and let us know how we can reference you today. And with that, whenever you're ready, take your time.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Rebecca Ireland. I represent the appellant Jacob Lindenkugel. This appeal raises two Fourth Amendment claims. First involves the seizure of Mr. Lindenkugel as he sat in his parked car at a hotel. And the second issue involves a warrantless car search that an officer conducted because Mr. Lindenkugel had cannabis products in his car. Products which Mr. Lindenkugel explained were cartridges prescribed to him as a registered patient in Minnesota's medical cannabis program and some CBD, both legal products. Because the seizure and the warrantless search were unreasonable, the district court erred in both of its suppression rulings. This court should reverse. Now, regarding the first issue, the seizure, I believe the facts and the law are well set out in the parties' briefs. So I would like to focus on the second issue this morning, the warrantless car search. And at the outset, I want to acknowledge, as this court and respondent are well aware, there's been a significant change in our cannabis laws as of 2019. And there have been a few subsequent non-precedential decisions of this court regarding the automobile exception as it relates to cannabis, one of which is at the Supreme Court now. With this in mind, I would like to address the legal standard that applies and whether this court must follow prior car search cases that were decided under now abrogated marijuana laws. Importantly, this court is not bound by those prior decisions, decisions like Thiel. Thiel's bright-line statement that the presence of marijuana establishes probable cause under the automobile exception is not good law as applied to this case, because that decision rests on marijuana laws that are null and void today. And I would add, that decision predates the existence of medical marijuana in Minnesota. In 2019, of course, the legislature decriminalized some cannabis, and for the first time ever, redefined marijuana to mean only high THC cannabis rather than any and all cannabis. This is a major change in our laws. Thus, prior auto search cases simply do not control the factual or legal setting that we have here. They do not resolve the question before this court of whether there is particularized probable cause based on the specific facts of this case. And because of this change of law and because of this scenario, as I stated in my brief, there's sound reason to overrule Thiel. But in the very least, this court need not follow it and should instead resolve this case analytically the way it recently did in a similar issue in Torgerson. And that is apply an individualized analysis of the specific case facts. I'd like to add that I am not arguing that the presence of cannabis and an officer's observations are irrelevant. To the contrary, an officer's observations regarding cannabis, as with all the circumstances around that cannabis, are relevant to the test here, the totality of the circumstances test, and they can contribute to probable cause. But on the facts of this case, without the additional indicia of a crime that occurred or that the car was harboring contraband, there's not enough to establish probable cause such that the officer could circumvent the warrant requirement of the Fourth Amendment.
Do you believe there was probable cause to search him?
I do not believe there was probable cause for, say, a search incident to arrest or the like.
Not even based on his driving conduct or the officer's observations that he was exhausted or he was having slow or slurred speech, which are indicia of intoxication?
Your Honor, there was no indicia of driving conduct in this case. Mm-hmm. The record is clear, and it appears from the briefing that the state would agree with that. This is not a driving case. If it were, we would be having a very different conversation today. And I think it's really important that the record does not establish driving conduct. To your related point, The officer had some suspicions here, no doubt. But those suspicions did not get above the level of mere suspicion or even articulable suspicion to get to that. It's well established that there's a higher level of probable cause. And with that, I think I've made my point that there's no bright line rule that controls here. So unless there's questions about sort of that test, I would like to go ahead and start talking about the specific and very unique facts of this case.
Ms. Ireland, I just want to clarify if I could. I need some of your guidance on Torgerson because, the Court of Appeals there was very clear to say they're not reaching the issue of whether or not the smell of marijuana was enough to establish probable cause to search. So that was, left. They seem to be looking at totality of the circumstances, and I assume that's what you're going to talk about. But I am concerned about the suggestion that as an error-correcting court, we take this bold step in this climate of legislative change to then say, things have changed. This was not sufficient, even though it had been previously.
Thank you. Your Honor, I want to be clear that I don't think that this court needs to overturn Thiel to resolve the issue before this court. I think it would be helpful because there is confusion among parties and courts about this issue. And with all due respect, there are conflicting opinions from this court regarding whether the case law even establishes a bright-line rule. This court in Torgerson appeared to discern no bright-line rule that even controlled, and so this court discerned no need to overturn any precedent whatsoever, but to simply follow the time-honored test of totality of the circumstances. So if this court is not comfortable overturning any prior cases for sake of providing clarity, in the least, declining to follow any single-factor bright-line rule, I think would comport with the approach in Torgerson, the longstanding approach that in the Fourth Amendment context, courts eschew bright-line rules and always look to an individualized analysis. So while I appreciate the concern about overturning prior cases, I don't think it's necessary, but I would also note that our appellate courts have long established that where there's a statutory change in the law that makes a prior decision inappropriate to present conditions, that courts can overrule or at least abandon those cases. Does that help, Your Honor?
It does. Can you give me your interpretation of what the totality of circumstances in Torgerson were?
In Torgerson, my understanding of the case is that it was based on a traffic infraction, so a legitimate traffic stop that quickly evolved into a warrantless search based on two officers detecting the odor of what they described as of marijuana, the smell of marijuana. In that way, it's not all dissimilar from the facts of this case because here the officer detected what he described as unburnt marijuana odor. Here, however, the case is a bit different and interesting because there's about 6 minutes that then transpire where the officer here did investigate further awaiting backup and did inquire of Mr. Lindenkuhl. And those facts, I think, are really important. And they're important because throughout that follow-up and investigation, the suspicions that the officer had certainly did not increase to the level of probable cause. If anything, they were mitigated or dissipated a bit. And that's because Mr. Lindenkuhl said, "Here are all the things in my car." He answered every question. He handed over his nicotine vapes. He, asked, what is in this bag here? It looks like a bunch of baggies. Mr. Lindenkuhl said, "Those aren't baggies. I'll tell you what I have here." Hands over, "These are my medical cartridges. I'm a patient in the cannabis program. Let me check my prescription."
Let me ask you a hypothetical question, counsel. What if there were a gun in plain view in the back of the car? And the officer, and the driver said, "I have a permit for that. It's legal. I can carry it. I'm not driving anywhere. Car's off. And the officer says, "I don't believe you. I don't think that that's right. And I'm going to search your car because I see a gun there. I don't think you have that gun legally. and I'm going to search. Is that possible? Is there something wrong with that, or how is that different than this case?
That's really different than this case. Importantly, in this case, the officer didn't discredit anything Mr. Lindenkugel said, nor did the district court. The record here doesn't establish that the officer testified, you know, he told me he had medical, and I didn't believe him, and here's why. I didn't believe him because he looked nervous. He was shifting around in his seat. I didn't believe him because of this or that or the color of the cartridges. None of that. The officer appears on the body cam to take what Mr. Lindenkugel is saying at face value and said, that's great, we'll work with that, but it doesn't matter. I have probable cause automatically. And the district court here said effectively the same thing. Effectively, here, the court did not explain how or why the cannabis products here, in light of these circumstances, in light of Mr. Lindenkugel's explanations, established probable cause. The court said, effectively said, those case facts do not matter because the law is so bright line on this matter.
So the linchpin of the facts in this case are that the officer did not suspect criminal activity because the officer believed the statements of the driver. And so if the officer believed that the driver was in lawful possession of the marijuana, then there would be no criminal activity such that the search would be valid. Is that right?
Your Honor, I think that's right.
Okay.
If the officer had testified, which he very well could have, saying, you know, that it didn't add up, and here's the reasons why it did not. And here, it's frankly incredible. I'm not the fact finder, but Mr. Lindenkugel talks about how he had to pay the registration fee to be a patient in the program, how much that costs. And the district court didn't discredit any of those statements. The district court said, well, none of that matters. And none of it matters because whenever there's the odor of cannabis, something illicit, there's probable cause. And that's a problem. That is a problem because it cannot be the law that whenever someone has cannabis, irrespective of any of the case facts, whether it's medical, whether it's hemp, whether it's CBD, whether it's unknown, any of the explanations, it cannot be the law that there's no Fourth Amendment protection and that an officer can always search. It has to be based on the case-specific facts. Your hypothetical, Judge Frisch, about the gun, you know, that those case facts are going to be very different from a different stop where there's a gun where someone hands over their permit and says, here's my permit, and an officer believes them. So I do think that specific facts matter here and that Mr. Lindenkugel's representations were not discounted or discredited. And because of that, the officer's concerns and suspicions were well dispelled, and they were dissipated. And the search was an automatic search. It was a knee-jerk search simply because of this notion that wherever there is cannabis, there is probable cause. And I think that that flies in the face of our Fourth Amendment jurisprudence, that the case facts do matter.
So would you liken this to whenever there's an odor of alcohol that doesn't give you probable cause to search the vehicle?
Well, the Supreme Court's already resolved that that's not enough. It has to be alcohol plus. The Supreme Court was clear in 2005 about that, and that's even under the lower reasonable checkable standards test.
So my question really is should we be applying the same test because certain forms of cannabis are legal, just like alcohol is legal? And in order to search the car, you need something more than an odor of alcohol to get into the car.
Your Honor, I would agree that it's effectively a cannabis plus test, mm-hmm. just like we have an alcohol plus test. Yes.
Is that premature, though? That is, you know, one of my concerns. I really feel we're in a changing landscape. Mm. And with this current session, it's going to be even further movement with respect to legalization of marijuana. And, you know, as you read factual finding number 18, the district court said the officer replied, we'll work on that when he's talking about these cartridges. He had probable cause because, quote, any resinous form of marijuana is illegal, close quote.
Your Honor, that statement that any resinous marijuana is illegal is factually inaccurate. The officer, who had frankly only been an officer for about 9 months, was just wrong on that point. The medical marijuana statute's very clear that waxes, resins, cartridges are perfectly legal products for a registered patient.
So is that a mistake of law by the officer?
Well, the officer, yes, and officers do make mistakes of fact and law. And, I mean, it's an objective test. You know, we're not going to This court will not resolve the issue based on everything the officer thought, but under an objective standard where Mr. Lindenkugel's statements were never discredited or disbelieved, there's not probable cause. And to Judge Hallbrook's related concern about the changing landscape, any changes forthcoming do not need to be addressed by this court. The law has already changed. And I'm not asking this court to radically change any Fourth Amendment jurisprudence. I don't believe. I think the totality of the circumstances test is well established. This court has already declined in Torgerson to follow any single factor test. But the law has changed. And the change that we had in 2019 is quite radical. In 2015, post-Thiel, medical marijuana. And those factors are relevant to this court's consideration. And I would ask, under that consideration, this court reverse, and it could be on either ground, the seizure or the warrantless search.
All right, thank you very much. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel?
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel? I'm Assistant Hennepin County Attorney Adam Petras, and I represent the respondent in this matter, the state of Minnesota. I'd like to make a few points about both of the issues that appellant raises, and then I'm more than happy to try to address any remaining questions that the panel has about this case. Regarding that first, was appellant seized issue, it's well established that no seizure occurs when an officer merely walks up to and speaks with the driver sitting in an already stopped vehicle. I want to respond to a couple of the cases that appellant relies on as part of that first issue argument. One is Lopez, which is a decision of this court from 2005. And in Lopez, in that case, in addition to partially blocking the defendant's vehicle, the officer activated the squad car's emergency lights, instructed the defendant to unlock the door, and then the officer himself opened the driver's door. None of those things happened in this case in the parking lot outside the Hilton. Another case is Sanger, which is a decision of this court from 1988. And in Sanger, this court held that the officer's actions, quote, created a strong show of authority and resulted in a seizure, end quote, because the officer parked his squad car in such a position that Sanger could not exit and then activated his emergency flashing lights and beeped his horn when Sanger attempted to back up out of that spot. And again, none of those things happened in this case. This case is much more factually consistent and similar to another precedential decision of this court, the Illy case, I-L-L-I. It's cited in the briefing. It's from 2015. And in that case, this court held that blocking in a car so as to cause a legal seizure under the Fourth Amendment occurs only when the officer actually positions his or her squad car so as to prevent that other vehicle from leaving. And so in Illy, just like in appellant's case, the district court found that the officer's squad car was not stopped in a way so as to prevent the individual from pulling away from where it was parked. And to make that finding, this court relied in Illy on the evidence that was in that case, specifically the video recording and then the arresting officer's testimony that supported it. And this court concluded that because the officer did not block in Illy's vehicle, the squad car's positioning did not constitute a seizure. Again, on page 9 of Judge Allen's order, district court order in this case, she specifically found that Officer Lowry did not park in a manner that completely prevented defendant from leaving the parking space. And that's supported by the evidence on the facts in the record. Exhibit 1, specifically at timestamp 1 minute and 9 seconds, you can see how easy it would have been able for defendant's pickup truck to back out of the spot that it had voluntarily tried to park into. And then transcript page 29 of the suppression hearing transcript, where you have Officer Lowry testifying, I would say I parked probably maybe 15, 20 feet behind appellant's truck. And again, not directly behind it, where it wouldn't feel like it could back out and leave. It was just offset to it. There's no clear error in the findings of fact from the district court from Judge Allen in this case. And there was no legal seizure that occurred in this case before Officer Lowry smelled the odor of marijuana emanating from inside appellant's truck.
Let's talk about the search of the truck. Why isn't, given the legislative change
and the officer, or at least the district court, there's no finding that the officer discredited the defendant's assertion that he had that he was in possession of the marijuana legally. Why are we not in the same space as alcohol? I mean, if it's a legal substance and there's an odor of a legal substance that's emanating from a vehicle, why aren't all of those alcohol cases that say you need something other than the odor to get you into the car? Why don't those apply?
A few responses, Judge Frisch. First off, I don't believe there's anything in the record, whether it come in the form of a testimony from Officer Lowry or a finding by Judge Allen, that the officer believed every single thing that appellant said. And there's obviously no requirement that an officer take a suspect at the gospel truth of whatever he says, even if there's not, you know, anything specifically refuting that that's put into the record. And to get to the core of your question, Judge Friss, under law right now as we stand here, alcohol and marijuana are not the same. Even after the legislation that allowed for industrial hemp and the legislation that allowed for medical marijuana, the fact remains that there are illegal ways to transport marijuana, there are illegal places to consume and use marijuana, and there are illegal amounts of it to possess. Right now, it is a crime in Minnesota under Section 152.027 to possess more than 1.4 grams of marijuana in a vehicle. That is a crime right now. That remains on the books even following this legislation. I understand about the open container law, but as far as I understand as well, there's not a limit to the amount of package sealed alcohol someone can have in their vehicle that would be the same as, you know, and also there's no odor coming from it as well. But even if an officer were to see, you know, package sealed containers of alcohol inside a vehicle, that is not the same as having that odor of marijuana, whether it be burnt or whether it be fresh, inside the vehicle. There's controlling case law on this point from the United States Supreme Court, from the Minnesota Supreme Court, and from this court. And it's not just Teal. I cite this in my brief, the Johns case from 1985 from the United States Supreme Court, which at the time, I understand this is a prosecution that ultimately came to state court, but at the time, Officer Lowry, back in July of 2021, is in that parking lot. He's allowed to enforce any law that applies there, including laws of the United States. The Minnesota Supreme Court, in both Schultz and Hodgman, quite clearly established that once there was a smell of marijuana, that is probable cause to search the vehicle. And it's not only Teal in terms of precedential decisions. There's Teal in 2014, there's Lozar in 1990, and there's Pierce in 1984, all precedential decisions from this court. And it perhaps may go without saying, but I disagree with this court's ruling in the Torgerson case. I understand that was non-precedential and obviously not binding on this panel here today. And I should note that, you know, that issue is going to have a precedential opinion attached to it. It was argued a few weeks ago in front of the Minnesota Supreme Court. And notably, that PFR was granted given the outcome in the Torgerson case, whereas other PFRs, for instance, that were filed in Grissom, which is the non-precedential decision from this court in 2022, after the legislation that authorized medical marijuana and after the legislation that authorized industrial hemp, this court followed the case law that I just outlined, those precedential decisions, and the Minnesota Supreme Court felt that a PFR didn't need to be heard by it. It was only until we got to Torgerson that the Minnesota Supreme Court accepted review. And I just want to return, with the time that I have left, to the standard that we're talking about here, probable cause. It is very well established that probable cause to search exists when there is a, quote, fair probability that contraband or evidence of a crime will be found in a particular place. It's not a certainty. It's a fair probability. And that's what Officer Lowry was facing when he saw at 4:50 a.m. approximately in the morning, someone sitting alone in their vehicle that was poorly parked in a hotel parking lot in an area that has seen an incredible increase in crime since the beginning of the pandemic. Statistically speaking, this information is not in the record, so please feel free to disregard it, but I believe there's approximately 120 licensed industrial hemp manufacturers in the state of Minnesota, and there's obviously 5 million people in the state of Minnesota. And I believe less than 1% of Minnesotans have a prescription for medical marijuana. So in terms of that fair probability standard, when Officer Lowy was presented with the evidence and with the information that he saw at the scene, it was a reasonable decision that there was a fair probability that contraband was going to be found given those statistical realities and the law as it currently stands right now. And I just want to touch with the 5 minutes I have left. It won't take all of that time, but Judge Hallbrooks, you were talking about the changing legal landscape right now. As I understand, I know House File 100 was just passed on Tuesday, and I believe the Senate version is going to have a vote tomorrow, and some things need to be worked out in conference committee. But in that third engrossment of House File 100 about the legalization of recreational marijuana, it was still going to be the statute I referenced before, 152.027, that criminalizes possessing marijuana in a vehicle, that has a minimum threshold of 1.4 grams. As I understand in the third engrossment of that House file, they're actually eliminating that threshold requirement so that the possession or the of any amount of marijuana in a vehicle was going to be criminal. Again, that may be changing in the ultimate law that could be signed by Governor Walz, but I feel that really dives into your point, Judge Hallbrooks, and that the landscape is changing right now. And what Officer Lowry did back in July of 2021 was perfectly reasonable under the Fourth Amendment. I am happy to entertain any questions that this panel still has.
Anything else? All right, thank you very much, Counsel. Ms. Ireland.
Thank you. Briefly in rebuttal, in response to Judge Frist's questions about the change in law and that cannabis is some legal, respondents spoke to the fact that it is still, some marijuana is still illegal, and it is still illegal to have some marijuana in a motor vehicle, but that's not really what's implicated in this case. It is perfectly legal under the statutes to have medical marijuana in a vehicle. There are restrictions about using them on school grounds and using while driving, but that's not what's happening here. This is not a driving case.
And there's some evidence in the record, if I recall correctly, that the type of the composition of marijuana that is legal has to meet certain thresholds, and if it doesn't meet certain thresholds of component compositions, then it is not legal. Is that right? Am I recalling the record correctly?
Right. So in 2019, the legislature decriminalized some cannabis. And just real briefly, this is important. Previously, marijuana was defined in our criminal code as any and all cannabis, any part of any cannabis plant, any species. And it's a pretty radical change that the legislature said, no, we're only going to define marijuana as high THC content cannabis, and it's 0.3% concentration level of Delta 9 THC.
So, I mean, the fact that he says he has a prescription for medical marijuana, and then there's marijuana in the car and the officer knows it, doesn't the officer have some reasonable basis, probable cause to believe that the marijuana that's in the car is not necessarily legal marijuana? It could be marijuana that's not authorized by the statute or doesn't meet those thresholds. I'm not using the right nomenclature, but I think you get what I'm saying.
I think I understand your question. Are you referring to the cartridges?
Yes.
Okay. He hands over the cartridges. We don't know much more about them other than Mr. Lyndon Google talking about how expensive they were and he had to register under the program, which is consistent. Patients under the program do have to pay a registration fee every year. The officer inspects them. Officers are trained on the laws. They're trained on changes in the law. They well know that there's medical marijuana. I think what's important is that Mr. Lyndon Google explained it. He said, I have a prescription. He reiterated, Minnesota has medical. If the officer had said, well, yeah, but I don't believe these are medical for this reason, then it would be different. Then there might be a greater suspicion of a crime, but without that testimony on the record that there was reason to discount Mr. Lyndon Google, that his explanations were not believable, without that we certainly can't get to probable cause. Whatever suspicion the officer had, objectively, under the objective standard, did dissipate. It dispelled the suspicion, certainly.
In that same factual finding, though, that I was quoting earlier, the district court refers to what the officer said when the appellant said, you know, these are cartridges from the state. He said, well, we'll work on that. So I am more persuaded, as Mr. Petra said, that he didn't adopt wholesale everything that the appellant said. I mean, he had suspicion.
He had suspicion. And we don't really know what the officer Lowry thought, because he wasn't inquired when he was under oath about that. But we know, at least under oath, he never said, I found him incredible on that point. And when the officer said, well, yeah, we'll work on that, the officer followed up and said, it just doesn't matter. I have probable cause no matter what, because it's marijuana. And that's effectively what the district court said here as well. I hope that speaks to your question. The officer, we'll work on that. The officer was quite, trying to be quite friendly and agreeable with Mr. Lindenkugel, and throughout the interaction made statements like, you know, I'm just going to take a look around. Yeah, we'll work on that. It's no problem. Don't worry about it. I mean, I don't think we can give that one comment of, yeah, we'll work on that much weight, because that was consistent with kind of how the officer comported himself throughout the whole interaction of, yeah, don't worry, we got it, we'll work on it, no biggie, kind of statements. I would reiterate that this court can and should reverse on either ground that there was not a sufficient basis for the officer to effectively interrogate and approach Mr. Lindenkugel simply because he was sitting in a car at a hotel. And if not reversed on that ground, I think the easier issue is, frankly, the warrantless search. There were not sufficient facts upon this record in this individual case to believe that this car harbored evidence of a crime. This court should reverse. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. Thank you very much for your submissions and your argument today. They were very helpful. We will take the matter under advisement and issue our opinion within the statutory period. And with that, we have concluded our calendar, and we are adjourned.
All rise.